Hey guys, it's the Worst Date Movies Ever. My name's Greg Knox. I'm joined by the Enzo Amore to my big cast, returning for the second series. It's Mr. Tom Cannon.
Hello, I guess that means that I've been booked without anyone's knowledge, and I'll only appear once and then be told to leave and never come back again.
And you were convicted of sexual assault. Well, you were charged with sexual assault, but then found innocent.
It was a consensual penis.
All the non-wrestling fans have switched off the show already. Yeah. Awesome. So, I wanted to do a documentary, because there's a lot of documentaries out there that could qualify as a worst date movie, and I've picked one that's not the most horrible documentary that there is out there, but it's a pretty, I don't know, it's a kind of a taboo subject.
I think the story or the subject matter is very extreme, but as we'll get into, it could have been a lot worse in terms of the content than it actually was. But yes, you did pick quite the topic. This is not one that's going to be appearing on BBC One as part of Panorama anytime soon. Or it's not going to be a segment on The One Show.
I would love to see it as a segment on The One Show. Wonder, man gets fucked to death by horse.
Yeah.
So that is essentially what the film is about. The film is called Zoo, and it's directed by Robinson DeVore, if that's how you say his name. Let's just say it is. And yeah, there isn't really that much to say in the background of the film itself, so let's go straight into this one. So Tom, what is the story, or very well, it's a very simple story of Zoo.
So it's the story of how it came to pass that a man died from internal injuries after being, as you said, it wasn't sodomized, that was wrong, after being how can I put this in a nice way?
He was fucked to death by a horse.
Yes, that is no two ways about it. That is what happened, yes.
Yeah, although that's not technically true, because that kind of implies that he died mid being fucked by a horse. What actually happened, according to an article on Vice, which is the source of every media that there should be out there, pinnacle of journalism, that he was pronounced dead to acute periodontitis that resulted from the perforation of the sigmoid colon during anal intercourse with a horse.
So he was sodomized to death.
He was, but he didn't die because of it. He died of his injuries.
He didn't die mid-sod.
Mid-sodomy, no, he did not. Now, as we're talking about this, clearly it's a horrible thing. I've covered many different topics on this series. I've covered people vomiting on each other, covered coprophagia on the last show, and now we're kind of touching the taboo subject of bestiality. Now, bestiality is a very interesting topic. It's like the worst kind of taboo apart from necrophilia that I can think of.
Or paedophilia, I reckon.
Okay, fair enough. You got me there.
Yeah. It's a top three. It's a top three bad. You're right. In fact, in a way, though, I think it is maybe not as bad as... Well, I don't know. We're kind of. Why am I even trying to quantify which one's bad? What I was going to say, though, was paedophilia, as horrible as that is, there are lots of documentaries about that type of thing, or people who are partaking in that and all of this type of thing. But there aren't really any documentaries that I know of about bestiality.
Yes, although bestiality is something that is very prominent in the documentary, the documentary itself is more about zoophilia. So these are people who, they love animals a lot.
But isn't, okay, surely we are just, sort of splitting hairs here. Isn't that just a nice way of calling someone a bestiality?
Person.
A bestible. Yeah.
A bestible.
Yeah, someone who...
It's their official term.
Yeah, a bestious. Yeah.
A bestie.
What? Yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. They are.
incredible.
Yeah, surely that is the same... Like, it is the same thing, right?
You're correct. I am splitting hairs somewhat, yeah. So, there are different types of documentaries out there. there is your Michael Moore / Louis Theroux style documentary, where the person making the documentary is basically the star of the documentary, mm-hmm. and it's from their perspective. Then you have your Talking Head style documentary, which is obviously very prominent. I think that's kind of the most common type of documentary that you see.
Yeah.
And then you've got something like this. Now, this is very, very different. This is, to me, akin to the style of something like Thin Blue Line, which, for anyone who hasn't seen it, is a great documentary. It's probably one of the best documentaries ever, where you have voiceover of the people involved and you have reenactments of sorts. Now, bearing in mind what we've told you the film is about, you don't see that in the reenactments itself, but it's quite weird. It's sort of quite a dreamlike kind of style that the director has tried to use here.
Very, very dreamlike. The use of, yeah, the imagery is a lot of it quite abstract, coupled with the music, which is very sort of ethereal and, as you say, dreamlike. And then with these talking heads, which often with the talking head, at least sometimes during a documentary, they will cut to the actual person talking, you know, cut in and out. But you never once see any of the people. You only hear the voices. And sometimes I found it personally a little bit confusing who was talking, because so many of them kind of had code names and funny sort of... One was called Coyote. One was called Mr. Hands. And yes. So... that adds to the sort of dreamlike state of the whole thing, because sometimes you're just hearing these voices, you're not really sure who's talking, and they're talking about, and even the way they talk is quite dreamlike, because they talk in code, don't they? They don't, none of them ever actually outright talk about what they do with the animals. They talk about going out to the barn to visit the animals, or going out and seeing if the animals are going to approach them and things like that. But they never once actually explain themselves as to what really happens.
Yeah, so the style of a documentary is, I would say, very Terrence Malick-esque. So, i.e. Tree of Life style, so that you've got these quite nice images and the use of classical music, or what is, I think, supposed to be classical music anyway, on the score. And yeah, it does evoke like a very dreamlike quality. And yeah, you're right. One of the things I would say about the documentary, I mean, it's on YouTube for anyone who hasn't seen it. It's just up there. And it's not like there's anything in there that's shocking. Although, obviously, the subject matter we're talking about is shocking, but the documentary itself is not shocking in that sense, unless you're offended by what people are actually talking about. Mm. But a lot of people in the comments would say it's very boring, which I can kind of see, if I'm being honest. It is quite hard to follow as well,
yeah,
because they do identify the different people as such. Like you said, there's Coyote, there's the Happy Horseman.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a great name.
This is the best name ever. A guy just called H, who's apparently a ranch hand, and Jenny Edwards, who is a horse rescuer. Now, Jenny Edwards is the only woman in the documentary, so when she's talking, it's quite obvious who she is. But other than that, they don't really identify which of the guys is talking at any one time, and they're all Southern, so they all kind of talk like that. So it could be kind of any one of them.
And that adds again to the dreamlike state, because when they talk really slowly like this, it's very sing-song. And so that then leads into with the music and the imagery. It's all... There was a point I actually did nod off for it. And partially because it is, at some point, a little bit boring. But also, it is, in a strange way... it's quite relaxing because it's just people talking with the occasional neighing of a horse. It's like one of those YouTube put you to sleep videos.
Yeah.
Like what they call it, AAMR or
ASMR.
Yeah, it's like...
ASMR is more like this, though.
That's true. But it's like one of these, a night at the stables type things, yeah.
Oh, God.
That's probably the name of one of those films, isn't it?
Now, although it's weird, again, one of the things I would say about it, which maybe doesn't help the documentary, is that there are basically two things going on in the documentary. There's Mr. Hands, and his story, or what we, well, what is known about him itself. But there is, there's about these zoophilias, zoophiliacs, I guess is what you would call them. So these community people who do kind of have these special relationships with animals. And I guess if you're, oh, it's a documentary about a man who died after having sex with a horse, you would expect something a bit more gratuitous.
Yeah.
Shall we say, than kind of what we get, which is not gratuitous really at all. There's only one scene where there's, well, there is a infamous video out there on the internet, is called Two Men, One Horse, or Just Mr. Hands. And it's a 30-second clip, apparently, of Mr. Hands and the horse engaged in fun time, shall we say.
But that's not the video. That's not a video of the actual horse that killed him, though, is it?
It, well, allegedly, it is.
Ah, okay. You'd have thought they would have at least...
They kind of showed it, because you, if you're in this, in the film itself, there's a scene of these people sat around a table watching it.
Yes.
And you can't see it. It kind of cuts in and out, so you don't see anything graphic, but it is kind of clear what's going on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you can hear sounds, can't you?
Yes. Yeah, so there's that. But so, yeah, so if you're going into this expecting, ooh, titillation, if you're into men having sex with horses, I guess. Yeah, it's not really like that at all. It's very, very different.
It's almost... so far removed, they've almost on purpose, I suppose, decided, well, this is a very extreme subject matter. We could have easily fallen into the trap of, as you say, being very gratuitous and things like that. So they've almost gone so far the other way. Instead of getting shots of that type of thing, you just get lots and lots of shots of, well, like, men in check shirts sitting round a dining table. There's a lot of shots of that.
Dinner or nature shots.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is nice, but it's not that exciting.
No. Now, Mr. Hands is something we heard about a long time ago. I think we heard about this while this was going on. So this is in the mid-2000s. I believe it was 2005.
Sort of an internet urban legend, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's one of those things that kind of happened in the very early days of the internet, sort of pre-YouTube or whatever. And yeah, I do remember our friend talking about it. It's the kind of thing that he would know about.
Yeah.
If you know our friend.
Yeah, I do, yeah. You're right, and I don't know if he'd... I can't remember the specifics. I don't know if he'd said he'd ever seen the video or anything like that, or if it was more just like, oh, there is this video that's going round, and this is what happened to the man. But, yeah, it is... I'm sure a lot of people of a certain age would remember or have vague memories of that as a thing that happened.
Yeah, it's kind of one of these things that predates like Two Girls, One Cup or One Man, One Jar. The Pain Olympics and stuff like that. All things that I have not seen, incidentally, but you hear about through the internet. This is kind of, like I say, back in the Wild West of the internet where you couldn't literally just find anything if you knew where to look. It was stuff that you heard about or someone you knew someone who'd seen it or something like that, which kind of gives it like this mythical quality to it. And yeah, you didn't even know the guy's real name. You just knew it was this guy called Mr. Hands, whatever that meant.
Yeah. Still not quite sure what that means now, actually.
No, I read that. It's a very, very strange name. But yeah, Kenneth Pinion, as I said, is the guy's actual name. Now, being a documentary, there's obviously certain things that you find out in the documentary. So Kenneth Pinion, he had a family. He had a wife who I believe the documentary said he was estranged from or maybe he had separated from, and he had children.
Yes.
And also he was an engineer at Boeing as well. So he wasn't a guy who, you know, was just, he was a smart guy, clearly.
Just had, well,
very, very strange sexual tastes.
He did certainly have that. And the bit that sticks with me, I remember there's a part where after he's passed away, they're talking to his brother. Well, I don't know, his brother wasn't in the documentary, actually, but it was sort of a hearsay of his brother had to go to the guy's flat, Mr. Hand's flat, and clean it, basically. Remove all of the things that he wouldn't have wanted other people to find. God only knows what that must be like to have to do that. So,
yeah. So apparently there was a lot of video material of him and other men having sex with various animals, including horses and cows. Yeah, obviously not a lot to do in rural America that all these people would decide to, have sex with animals, as you do.
Clearly Boeing doesn't keep you busy enough.
No, clearly not. No, you'd think you'd have better things to do, like making planes and things like that. What the film also kind of talked about, and again, we kind of mentioned the internet already, is all these people, who these zoophiles, they all met really basically on the internet. So this is kind of like a very early example of the internet kind of, you know, trying to find people with common interests on the internet, I guess. I mean, whatever that interest may be. Yeah, so that's how Mr. Hands met all these people in, you know, Washington and sort of, yeah.
It really shows you, actually, that, yeah, even in the very early days, maybe it was like that even more back then, and I guess what we're talking like early 2000s or whatever, that maybe it was even more at that point the internet was a place where the most niche, bizarre interests and likes could meet up together. I mean, I'm sure it's still like that now, but it's more, it feels many parts of the internet way more commercial now. Whereas,
yeah, I agree.
Back then, I suppose it was way more Wild West. You'd like people talking about they got sent money in that documentary and they moved out to be close to the fellow zooies.
Zooies.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I guess, a big community.
It's a very niche community. It's niche within niche within, well, many niches.
I suppose nowadays you've got furries.
Yeah.
They seem more popular than...
It's a more acceptable version of these zoophiles, I guess. Yeah, these are people who just like to dress up as animals.
Yeah.
Not literal animals. Now, obviously, Mr. Hands like doing things that you're not supposed to do with horses. Would you like to know how these different people managed to get the horses to do that to them?
Yes. This was not explained in the documentary.
Okay, so in this Vice article that I found, so it's an interview with the writer of the film. So he was a gentleman who was basically doing, he was very interested in the story and he did a lot of reporting on it at the time. It's a gentleman called Charles Mudade, I think that's how you say his name. And apparently what they would do is they would literally get naked and then basically they would cover themselves in some sort of pheromone that attracts horses to them. And basically the horse would oblige.
Wow. Okay, so that's quite scientific. Well, yeah, that was not explained in the documentary. No. I just thought they did talk about walking around naked, didn't they? But they didn't talk about pheromones and stuff.
Yeah, there was one of the reenactments was of the actor playing Mr. Hands kind of naked, wandering around this field with horses in and talking to them and whispering sweet nothings to the horses and things like that.
What, so... So it's a lot more scientific than I thought it was going to be. So putting some effort in there.
Actually learning sort of how you would do that.
Yeah.
Now, this does sort of pose a very interesting question that they do kind of raise in the documentary itself. Now, at this point, bestiality was not illegal in the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So these men were not breaking the law as such. But very interestingly, and I you know, hey, it's 2019, so this topic does come up a lot. It's this topic of consent.
Yes.
So can an animal consent, in your opinion?
No, I don't think it can. I would put an animal, we all agree a child can't consent, for example, because they are not a fully formed adult. They can't make those type of complex decisions. They don't have the mindset. They just can't consent. They're just not able to. And in similar ways, in my opinion, a horse or any animal is even obviously less intelligent than a human and a child. And therefore... definitely an animal can't consent at all because they don't have no concept of what is going on, in my opinion.
Well, I guess in the example of this film, and you know, based on what I've just said, I suppose the horse would think it is engaging in intercourse with another horse.
Yeah, exactly. So it's being tricked into it.
It's being worked.
Yeah, exactly.
It's working the horses.
It's a working horse. working stiff. But, it's complete. You're tricking the animal. Even if the animal just did it without the pheromones and all that type of thing, I still think that that's just wrong, because it's the animal just doesn't think. I'm sure the animal thinks that you're just a horse, basically. End of.
Bit of a small horse.
Yeah.
Maybe like a Shetland pony type thing.
Exactly, with no hair.
Which, there is a very weird scene that actually happens in the documentary involving a Shetland pony. It's not literally what you see. It's the voiceover narration of this woman who is this horse rescuer, so to speak, of, so yeah, Jenny Edwards, talking about how after Mr. Hands died and this national news story happened, obviously you've got to rescue the horse that's been involved in this, and obviously you're taking the horse away from basically the guy whose ranch they were staying at is the guy who organized it, basically, for them to come over and have parties and do things with animals and stuff like that. So she was taking this horse away, and apparently this guy turned up to buy the horse and apparently had a deed of sale. This is very important. Get your paperwork in order and all that stuff, with a Shetland pony, and apparently the Shetland pony did something to the horse, if you remember from a documentary.
No, I missed that bit.
You must have been asleep.
I must have been asleep. I do not remember
They were all right. I'm very sorry, everybody. Blame Tom for this one. All right, so basically, apparently, this Shetland pony started giving the horse a blowjob.
What? Okay. I definitely would remember that bit. Oh, well, I assume the woman asked them to politely leave at that point.
Yeah, I mean, how a horse, or any kind of horse, would know what a blowjob is, I don't know. I'm quite curious in the mechanics of that, but okay, apparently that's what happened. Again, not that you see any of this in the film, but oh well. I kind of agree with you. I think an animal doesn't really understand the concept of interspecies sex, I guess. So to them, it may as well be another animal of their species. I guess. So yeah, no, so I agree with you in terms of consent. Why are we talking about consent and stuff like that?
Well, we're just educating here. You're just laying your flag down, say this podcast is against bestiality.
Yeah, it's a moral conundrum.
It is,
I guess. So we're debating the ethics of having sex with animals on this show. This is what this show has come to.
Yeah, both educational and ethical.
It's like a debate. Now, obviously, after this, they did outlaw bestiality, and it's not like you're not going to go to prison for years and years and years, but you can go to prison for it now. So
it's like how you downplay. You're not going to go to prison for years, and I mean, you'll just go for a little while. But still, please stop having sex with that hamster. you're going to, yeah. Well, yeah. Was the law changed as a result of this?
Yes.
Okay.
So what happened? And you know, this is on the record, and they mentioned it's in a documentary. So as I mentioned, it was legal before. And the Republicans, well, I think the senator in Washington at the time was a Republican, and they thought, okay, this is not good. They passed a bill which then basically outlawed bestiality, so can't do it now. And so all the people who were living in Washington to have sex with animals, they went to a state where it was still legal, which is Tennessee. Apparently, that's where they went.
How unsurprising, I suppose.
As they do. I suppose what we should kind of ask at this point is, why would you have sex with a horse? Or why would you let a horse have sex with you? Because there is actually quite a key difference.
Yes.
Because apparently, in this article, the question is, did they ever fuck the horses? No, that wasn't their school.
That's not what they liked.
No, they're not into having sex with the horses themselves. They're into the horses having sex with them.
Right. So is that... Okay. I didn't know that even within such a sort of niche thing like this, there was even subsections of that as well. Givers, well, takers, that type of thing. Just watchers. Exactly. Two at a time, three at a time.
Three at a time with toys and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think they're both as bad as each other. I don't think it matters what the mechanics are of these things. Again, we're going back to the issue of splitting hairs, I reckon. Once you just get into any of that type of thing, it's just illegal. I don't think there should be a distinction between what you've done, what's happened to you. It's just illegal.
Yeah, although based on the documentary, based on what I've read, Mr. Hands in particular is quite an interesting case. Apparently, and again, this is all according to the internet. This may be true. I assume it is true, because I don't know why you would say this otherwise. Apparently, he had a motorcycle accident which affected the sensations that he feels. So he was kind of numb to a lot of stuff. So he then would have to go to ridiculous extremes to kind of get any kind of sensation whatsoever, which is hence why he would do things like have sex with horses.
Okay, now that's interesting. Like that. You think they'd have mentioned that in the documentary?
Well,
because you hear similar things. I've heard things in the past about people who display characteristics of being psychopaths or serial killers. Sometimes they'll trace back that they've had some sort of brain injury or accident in the past, which affects their frontal lobe or whatever it is, the frontal cortex. And then that changes their personality. And that's kind of one of the reasons maybe why they become serial killers in the first place. That's a very interesting twist on that documentary, which I would have liked them to explore a bit further. Maybe at the time the documentary came out, that wasn't known. Or maybe, as you said, it's just one of these made up things, just a bit of internet lore that doesn't make, well, isn't actually true.
Mm. Now, that the Mr. Hands part, as I said, is kind of the main section of the documentary, is about kind of that. But obviously the documentary is about Sophelia as well. Now, one of the things that, again, this is when I was looking up on YouTube, one of the issues that people had about the film is that, apart from you not really being all that graphic and being slightly hard to follow, is that the director's stance is very kind of, I would say kind of neutral, boring to the point of non-judgmental in terms of these people themselves. It's very much letting them tell their side of the story, explain kind of why they love animals the way they do, and it's not poking fun at them or anything or passing judgment.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, there's no judgment there whatsoever. They just let the people talk, and it's up to you to decide. You're right, there's really no, there's just no judgment, there's no skewing of the way it's said, there's no footage to try and make them look good or bad. It's just purely from their own words, which obviously, in if anything, it's almost too biased towards that group of people, because there is no, there's no real counter point. Apart from that lady who talks about rescuing the horses, she's only in it for a short amount of time, and there's no real like other side of the argument. So I would say it's too biased in a way towards the zoophilia. I'm going to call them zoophiliacs from now on.
Although even by the end of the documentary, she kind of says like, okay, I don't quite maybe get the sex part, but I really love horses, platonically. Weird on the show that I have to talk about it in those terms, but like, I can kind of understand how you would love something so much that maybe you would have to have a relationship with it. And there's a really weird thing, they didn't mention this in a documentary, but when I was doing my research on this, one of the things that came up is a lot of people who do this are on the autistic spectrum.
Oh, really?
So it's because people with autism, like myself, they kind of, because they find relationships with people quite troubling and kind of difficult, and a lot of the time they find it easier to get on with animals. I do.
Yeah.
Anyway, a lot of people in this zoophilia community, they possibly are autistic. And yeah, it's, I don't know, it's kind of, it's a more extreme version of kind of, you know, I love animals, not in this kind of way, but yeah, I mean, so in a way I can kind of see if you, for whatever reason, can't form relationships with other people, that you could find it easier to form relationships with animals, I guess.
I'm not convinced. Like, okay. I what you say makes sense in terms of people finding it easier to form relationships with animals, absolutely, but taking that to the neck, that's taking it to the extreme.
Yeah.
But again, you raised, that's a really interesting aspect which is not covered at all, and I feel was a complete missed opportunity for the documentary to go in some really interesting directions.
Yeah, I agree with that. I found that aspect of it interesting, but as you said, not kind of mentioned in the documentary. So we haven't really talked about the documentary as such, because the documentary itself is very weird. It's kind of very kind of hard to follow in a lot of ways. So as I said earlier, you've got people talking, and it's hard to tell most of the time who is talking. And then the narrative kind of goes in weird directions. So at one point it goes kind of back in time to Mr. Hand's kind of when he was with his family and stuff like that. But this is after he's died and things like that. So yeah, it can be incredibly, incredibly hard to follow.
Yeah, I mean, they don't even have really a central narrative person in it. It sort of jumps. While it is predominantly, I suppose, about Mr. Hands, to an extent, you really don't find out anything about him, which is strange because it's told, I suppose the reason is it's told from the point of view of the other men who are in that group, and they didn't really know anything about him. So from their point of view, they're telling you all the information that they knew, which is, quite frankly, not very much at all. But by the time this film was made, everyone knew who Mr. Hands actually was.
Yeah.
So, again, could have been a very interesting conversation with, I don't know, work colleagues of his, family members even, friends, all of that. That would have been fascinating.
They don't even give the guy's name.
No, they purposely bleep it out, in fact, when they play you a bit of a news a TV news item about the incident, they actually bleep out his name. So they go out of their way to keep you guessing, or at least to keep you from not knowing very much. Now, what year was this film made?
2007.
So it's not even like this was made kind of pre-internet, where, oh, well, you couldn't really find out stuff unless they told you. Anyone who was watching this documentary, as soon as the documentary's over, if you were curious, you could just Google it. I think Google was around then.
Yeah, it would have been,
You could just ask Jeeves it. So,
ask Jeeves.
Yeah, so like, I don't know why they felt the need to just tell you nothing. There's so many more interesting things I would have liked to know.
Yeah, some of the stuff in there is very odd. So there's a random scene, which I think is about a minute long, or at least it felt like a minute long, of a man just driving in his car listening to the radio. Very, very odd. There was a section of the film that I found very, very bizarre. So obviously the film is, obviously horses are very predominant in the documentary. There's a whole section with Jenny Edwards where she's talking about this horse that had to have its eyes taken out.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what that was all about.
Had no bearing on the rest of the documentary. Apparently it was, you know, foraging for food and it kept getting poked in the eye by these thorns and these sharp twigs and stuff like that, and they had to remove its eyes. And this had no bearing on the rest of the documentary, so I was like, okay, that's very, very bizarre. Like, I expected it to come back later and it never did. So, yeah, and like I said, it does kind of jump back and forth. So, I mean, as a film, would you recommend it?
Okay, well, firstly, it isn't as extreme as you might think.
No.
Certainly, they treat the subject matter with about as much care as you probably could treat something like this. As we said before, it's not judgmental. It's definitely not gratuitous. It's not salacious, any of those types of things. So from that point of view, like, if people were worried or put off, like, oh, I don't think I'd enjoy that type of thing, it's not really like that. From a documentary perspective, I kind of like the style. It was, as we've said many times, it's dreamlike. But I felt that ultimately it left me rather unsatisfied. It left me with more questions than answers. And really, I almost felt like they let the guys involved who were telling their story get away with a hell of a lot, because they just told it how they wanted to and no one really questioned it at all.
No, in a way, you almost kind of would maybe prefer like a Louis Theroux style documentary.
Oh, massively, yeah.
Because I think he would at least pose the other side of the argument.
Yeah.
In there. And yeah, he could probably, you know, talk to these people if they wanted to be on camera, which obviously they didn't. That's why they've kind of maybe done it in the way that the director's done it. It's very kind of heavily stylized, as I said. I mean, yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I think as a documentary, it's not the worst documentary I've ever seen, but it does kind of leave a lot to be desired. It's 75 minutes long, and it does feel longer than that. And you could probably shorten it. You could do it in like 30 minutes. You could do it as like a made for TV style documentary, probably cover a lot of the same stuff. And yeah, there's kind of a lot more depth that you could go into for sure. So I'm not saying the film is bad, but there's definitely kind of a lot more you could kind of go into sort of subject wise.
Slow and meandering. That's how I would describe it.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, the way it was done with the music and sort of a lot of the imagery and stuff, you could definitely use it to go to sleep to. Now, that's not to say it's boring. It's just that it, you know, trying to kind of settle into it, you can get into a bit of a groove and kind of want to go to sleep. Which kind of brings me to the next kind of subject, which is in as a date movie. How would you, well, first of all, would you say it's a good date movie or a bad date movie?
I think it's a bad date movie, but not necessarily for the reasons of, oh my God, it's so terrible. It's going to drive someone away from your house within the first 20 minutes. I just think it's not really the type of film to watch on a date. A, because of the subject matter. Yes, a lot. Some people will just instantly think, what are you doing?
Why are you making me watch a documentary about a man who got killed by a horse?
Yes. And then almost what's worse then, really, is that it's then actually, as we said, kind of quite slow anyway. So it's not even, I just don't think it would hold people's attention.
Okay, so I would say I agree with that. However, and I pose this question instead. Would this work as a Netflix and chill? Because to me, purpose of a Netflix and chill is you want to put up in a film that's not too good, and it's not too, so it's not good enough to kind of, that the person will just want to keep watching the film for the whole, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours, whatever. And it's not ridiculous, you know, straight away to the point that they'll just get kind of annoyed and run away and never talk to you again, because it's not immediately obvious straight away what it is about. And because of its style, you could get away watching it for 10 minutes and they could get bored.
Yeah, okay, potentially, but you wouldn't want to leave it running though.
But other than that, it's not a good date movie.
No,
at all.
No, it's not going to get anyone in the mood, let's put it that
so
way.
So it's a risky watch.
It is. It's a
very, very risky watch.
It's a risky watch.
You would have to put it on and not say what it was.
Yeah. Oh, it's just,
you would just have to have it on in the background.
It's about a zoo.
Yeah, it's about animals. You love animals.
Yeah.
If you this is a very, very bad date movie if you're with someone who likes horses.
Or a vet.
Yeah, so, yeah, anyone who owns a horse or enjoys horse riding, probably not one for them to watch. They will get very upset.
And equally, if someone watches it and they're into it too much, that's a bit of a warning sign too.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't want to compete with a horse, would you? So, on a bad date movie scale, 1 to 5, 1 obviously being easy and 5 being horrendous.
Give it a 3.
A 3, okay. I would say See, the subject matter alone, it should be really high up. But because obviously it's not gratuitous, it doesn't even really go into any great detail about what happened. I mean, it's clear what happened to Mr. Hands and what these people are into, but it's not like it sort of tells you in any of the great depths that we have on the show today. It's probably worse to listen to this show than watch the film, yeah, in fairness. So I would give it a 2.
Yeah. Which is funny to say, isn't it, for the subject matter, but it really is pretty tame.
It is pretty tame, yes, I agree. So, if you would like to buy it on DVD, if you're interested in the idea of a documentary about, you know, horse love and things like that, you can only buy it in Region 1 on DVD from a company called Think Film, who are the production company who actually put the film out. But, as you mentioned, if you are curious in any way, it's on YouTube. So, if you just look up Zoo on YouTube...
Not really a buyer, I would say. Definitely more of a watch it on YouTube type thing.
If it was on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something like that.
I don't think it's going to be on Netflix.
It'd be very, very interesting if it was, let's put it that way. For those people who like Black Beauty.
Yeah, I'd love to see the algorithm on that one. You watched War Horse.
You may enjoy this.
Yeah.
And I have certainly enjoyed the show today. So I want to thank Tom Cannon very much for appearing on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me. I think this is probably the most relaxed film that I've seen so far for the podcast. So thanks. Yes. As I said, nearly nodded off. So it was rather nice.
There you go. You most certainly couldn't do that during ABCs of Death.
No.
There's far too many short films to watch. So that's been Zoo. As I said, there are quite a few kind of controversial documentaries out there that I want to cover. And I'll do that on another one on the podcast very, very soon. I hope you enjoyed the show. On the next show, I'm going to be going solo. Not sure what film I want to cover yet. So keep your eyes peeled on Twitter and you'll see what film I decide to cover. So until then, that's it. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter and suggest movies for me to review at Worst Date Movies. And don't forget to click subscribe wherever you're listening to this right now to never miss any future episodes of Worst Date Movies ever.